Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. The UEFA Champions League group stage rolls onto match day two. Stream every Champions League game live today and tomorrow on Paramount Plus. Reunion to the order of the match day with two of the greatest goal scorers in the world playing against their former clubs today. 3 p.m. Eastern time, Bayern and Barcelona both boasted big wins in their first match day bouts, and they look to keep the momentum going as they face each other in Munich. Polish marksman and hat-trick hero Robert Lewandowski returns to the Allianz Arena as the enemy for the first time since his transfer to Barcelona over the summer. And then tomorrow, Wednesday the 14th at 3 p.m. Eastern time, Manchester City versus Borussia Dortmund. Erling Haaland, the Norwegian meat shield himself, leads Manchester City against his former club Dortmund, with both teams coming off huge wins last week. Every single match, along with the Europa League and my favourite Europa Conference, are available live and on demand exclusively on Paramount Plus. New subscribers get a 7-day free trial now for free going to paramountplus.com/MIB. There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
Real Madrid, when the players play in Champions League, they are in their house, they breathe the atmosphere, they know the way to manage the situation to win Champions League. It means that you are a team that you live in this competition, and your habitat, your natural habitat.
This is Rog, and you're listening to European Night, presented by Paramount Plus, the show that, in Antonio Conte's words, lives in the Champions League. And welcome to our house. Come on inside, the MTV Cribs of European Football Podcasts. As always, I'm joined by my roommate in football, Rory Smith, New York Times chief soccer correspondent and the author of Expected Goals, the story of how data conquered football and changed the game forever, a.k.a. the Todd Bowley autobiography. Rory, what a week it's been since we last chatted. So bloody much has happened. So much didn't happen. The Premier League football this weekend, there was cricket, there was rugby, but the Premier League, for complex reasons, less than 24 hours before the weekend kicked off, decided to postpone and honour the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. How do you understand the factors they weighed, how they arrived at that decision?
I think that there's a mixture of things that were going on. One that I think is really important is obviously this, that there is a period of national mourning in Britain at the moment. And so obviously on Friday morning, the day after the Queen died, there was a sense of, right, what will we do about sport this weekend? And there's been a lot of anger about this, the fact that football decided to cancel, where other sports, having taken advice from the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, other sports, cricket, rugby, ice hockey, I think, all continued. This isn't a hot take. I can kind of see why football decided to pause. I think that they would have been conscious that they wouldn't have wanted to seem like they were kind of bulldozing ahead. I think the Premier League, particularly in a way that cricket and rugby and horse racing don't have to, I think the Premier League is uniquely positioned to be accused of thinking it's the most important thing in the world. And I think they were probably right to be conscious of that. I think there was a sense of, would it be appropriate? And I would, my personal view there would be kind of, people can mourn in their own ways. No one was going to be forced to go to football. You know, if you didn't want to go to football, didn't want to watch football, then you didn't have to. I think that the thing I had a real problem with was the fact that the Football Association, rather than the Premier League, decided that kids' football couldn't happen, which I thought was an extremely strange decision to make. I don't think there's any real justification for saying that kind of six-year-olds can't go and have a kickabout with their friends on a Saturday morning, when those six-year-olds will not be kind of sitting quietly, respectfully paying their respects to the Queen. That's not how six-year-olds operate. I think there was a lot of muddled thinking. I think there was a desire not to be accused of something. I think there was probably a little bit of panic, and that all kind of fed into the games being called off. It feels in hindsight like maybe calling the games off last weekend was a bit premature, maybe. I don't think there would have been a problem if they'd gone ahead. But equally, I can see why, in the relative urgency of the situation, they chose to go down that path.
By the way, one thing I do think is fascinating and underreported by the British media is really the howling outcry from global broadcasters who now actually pay a fortune to the Premier League for broadcast rights, whose audiences were not mourning the Queen, but were left with a massive, often prime-time broadcast hole to fill, which is really the price the Premier League now has got to pay as a no longer just national league, but one that is inherently global.
Yeah, no, there's something really interesting about the fact that obviously the Queen dying is a very British event. And to be honest, it's not even a universal event in Britain. There are a lot of people who are just getting on with their lives. And, you know, I read a lot of the New York Times' coverage of it, a lot of coverage from around the world. And yeah, there are people here who are genuinely upset. There are people here who felt a personal connection to the Queen, whether they're royalists or not. Not everyone in Britain is a royalist. That goes without saying. It feels a bit of a stretch to suggest to me that the whole country is paralysed by grief. I don't think that's true. I don't say that disrespectfully, but I don't think that's true. And it's certainly not the case that the world is paralysed by grief. It's not necessarily a global event to a lot of people. I suppose it is testament to the position the Premier League finds itself in that, yeah, that one of the factors in that decision will have been, what do we do about the money that these broadcasters have paid? And that's domestic broadcasters as well as international broadcasters, for these games that are now not happening. And that is a real problem for them. The other kind of footballing problem, obviously, is when they're going to play these games. Does that is not a question that I think anybody can answer.
That is a challenge that football has brought on itself. But the other big news of the week, the changing of the guard from Thomas Tuchel to bearded wonderboy Graham Potter at Chelsea Football Club. Last week, when we discussed data-driven American investor group Redbird's arrival at Milan, you talked about how ideas need winners before they take hold in the world of football. And now, one of Data Analytics' great young sons is stepping squarely into the spotlight. Graham Potter, a wunderkind who really acts like he's just swallowed a scientific calculator, taking his coaching and recruitment team with him to Stamford Bridge. Rory, you first interviewed him when he was a baby-faced Östersund's manager in the wilderness of Sweden. And despite looking like he just walked off the set of the Peep Show, he was every bit the innovative, forward-thinking manager then that he is now. Talk about your impression of Potter, early days, and what you've observed as his coaching career evolved from station to station.
Yeah, it was when I was working for the other Times, the what Americans call the London Times, but what people in Britain just call the Times. I'd just written a book about English coaches abroad. It's called Mister. It's very good. It's hard to get hold of. That was looked at kind of the history of English coaches all over the world. And obviously I was kind of attuned to stories like that. And I can't remember exactly how I discovered it, but it will have been, as this is the process behind which all journalism works, somebody else will have written about it first and I'll have stolen it. That I suspect is what happened. About a young English coach doing interesting things, but weird things in the Swedish second division. And that coach was Graham Potter. The weird thing was a performance of Swan Lake with his players. They were really into kind of doing all these, it wasn't just team building, but it was kind of, they were keen to get the players out of their comfort zones to convince them. I guess it was something to do with kind of dealing with performance pressure, that if you can put on a ballet of Swan Lake in front of 5,000 people, then you can probably go and put a few crosses in. You know, there's probably a logic there. I'm not entirely sure that all that stuff works. But I spoke to Graham then, and he was personable and bright and a little bit more academic maybe than you'd expect most people in football to be, which sounds very snobby, and I can't really do anything about that. Yeah, he was clearly forward-thinking and progressive and interested in doing things differently. He then got the Swansea job, which was a very Swansea appointment at the time. It felt left field. It felt kind of innovative. And then it wasn't really a surprise he did relatively well at Swansea. The speed that he went to Brighton was a little bit unexpected, but it wasn't a surprise that he went on to bigger and better things. And his work at Brighton has been very impressive in the round. You know, over the 3 years, he's done incredible things. I do think there's a slight rewriting of history. I saw a stat the other day that he's the only manager ever who's had three consecutive wins in three consecutive years, or home wins these were. So he won a game in 2019 and then they went on a big winless run and he didn't win another game until 2020. And then I think COVID hit. And then his next home win came at the start of 2021. So he had three home wins separated by three calendar years. And I think that indicates that Brighton were not always getting the results that their good play suggested they should. And it will be interesting to see at Chelsea whether there is a kind of lag between his ideas being presented and being sort of introduced to the players and them really taking hold. It does feel as though it wasn't a quick process. And the one thing we know about elite clubs in general, and Chelsea in particular, there's not a lot of time. So Todd Bowley and the Clear Lake Consortium are talking about changing their culture and doing things differently and wanting to kind of rewrite the DNA of the club. Champions League level football doesn't really let you do that. There's lots of clubs who've said they want to do that. There's not many who've really followed it through. So it will be interesting to see how serious Todd Bowley's commitment to Chelsea's culture is.
Todd Bowley, I can imagine, be like, guys, when are we going to get the wins? And Grandpa's like, guys, it takes a couple of weeks to perfect the boys' Swan Lake performance. Come on, Mason Mount, back to being lead Swan. It's going to be fascinating to witness this marriage of ideologies, the soulful tactician, Potter, and the just win baby, Al Davis-esque culture, especially amongst the fans at Stamford Bridge and Chelsea Football Club. All I've got to say on this matter for now is free Christian Pulisic. Yes, Thierry Henry, I just said that. Tuchel's final game in charge, that 1-0 loss to Dinamo Zagreb in the first Champions League group stage. He was really gone the moment Todd Bowley realised if he wanted a winner, could have just bought a Croatian team and saved himself $3 billion. Graham Potter will step onto one of football's biggest stages in his first game as Chelsea manager in the Champions League. That is Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, against RB Salzburg, live and on demand, exclusively on Paramount Plus. New subscribers can get a 7-day free trial. You can't beat free by going to paramountplus.com/MIB. Now, let's dive straight headfirst into the football. Barcelona fans didn't waste any time in crafting a ballad to toast new hero Robert Lewandowski. This was sung after last week's Camp Nou hat-trick against Victoria Poulsen. And today's first big, Rory Smith, Unleash the Clip Exploration, is a deep dive into the club that had one of Europe's most perplexing summers, FC Barcelona. The team who last year, Euro, described as the worst run club in Europe. They had truly lost their way. But in the latter half of last season, they almost seemed to stumble onto the path forward after appointing Xavi and getting the best out of your Gavis, your Pedris, your Fatis. And while Real Madrid rather ran away with the La Liga title and the Champions League, Barcelona fought off competition from Atleti, Sevilla, Betis to finish second. But what followed, perhaps related to their disappointing semi-final crash out of the Europa League, was a summer of really Caligula-style excess, a confounding one. Player after player was announced, often poaching signatures at the 11th hour from, well, mainly Chelsea. And admittedly, when a player like Lewandowski is available, you do that deal with no questions asked. But what was happening simultaneously was a fire sale of Barcelona's main business assets, from TV rights sold to a US investment firm, Sixth Street, for the next 25 years in two deals worth more than $500 million. Stadium naming, the production business, Barca Studios. And there's also some less ceremonious treatment of their existing players scrambling to cancel contracts and just offload them so they could register the shiny new signings. Rory, how do you understand all of this? Because it was clearly a statement being made by Barcelona this summer, but I can't quite figure out what it is.
So I guess there's two ways of doing it. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure football club, Barcelona, at the moment. So the Joan Laporta way of understanding it, the president of Barcelona, was that when he took over, they were, give or take, $1 billion in debt. And he needed to find ways of filling that debt, partly because you don't want to be $1 billion in debt, and partly because La Liga's financial rules meant that Barcelona had to increase their incomings if they were to increase the outgoings they were permitted to give to their players. And obviously, if you don't have a room in your salary cap, I guess this is quite a familiar concept in American sports, if you don't have room in your salary cap, you can't add new players. And it's probably fair to say that Barcelona needed new players. So what Laporta did was he looked around and he thought, well, we could, you know, do what most teams do, and that's sell off the players that we've got, the best, some of the best ones, keep a couple if we can, and then rebuild around our youth academy. And that is something that Barcelona have done before. And, you know, some of the players that came out of the youth academy were quite good, so that might work. But Laporta decided that would be slow and boring, so he did the other thing, which was he sold off anything he could think of to whoever would buy it in the hope of making money. And some of those deals make sense. Like it's a little bit tawdry maybe to have Camp Nou sponsored by Spotify, but at the same time, they're not the only club in the world with a sponsored stadium, so that's fine. They then started selling off the future. Effectively, they have very much sold off their tomorrow to pay for today. And they are things like percentages in Barca Studios to investment firms, percentages of their future TV rights. And again, you can see in dire circumstances why that might seem like a good idea. I'm surprised that no one mentioned that the obvious caveat, which is that now Barcelona for the next 25 years will get the same amount of money as Real Madrid in domestic television rights, but they will have to give 25% of that money to an investment firm, which means they don't get it. But Laporta got them into a position of such financial strength that they could start doing these deals. And that's the Joan Laporta approach to Barcelona's strange summer, that they had to take that risk because they had to kind of kickstart a new cycle. They had to start winning again because that will attract more sponsors. That will earn them more prize money. It will get them further in the Champions League. You know, if you get knocked out in the group stages, as they did last season, you're probably earning $50, $60, $70 million less than if you make the semi-finals. Say they don't have to win these competitions. They just need to be going deep in them. This is going to get slightly messy, but Joan Laporta's view is that you have to sell off tomorrow to make today better, because if today is better, then so will tomorrow. So I think that's kind of his logic. The other view is that Barcelona is a club that is not owned by an individual. It's owned by its fans, and the president is elected by the fans. Presidents generally quite like power, and don't want to give it up once they've got it. So what Laporta's done is he's looked around and thought, well, I could preside over a slow and steady, painstaking rebuild around Gavi and Pedri and Ansu Fati. Or, because that might mean I don't win any trophies, which might mean I don't get re-elected, what I can do is find whatever money I can and splurge it on whichever players I can find who can make us competitive today. And that's what he's done. So they go and sign not only Robert Lewandowski to a four-year contract at the age of 33. I think he was 33 when he signed. So that's not... I mean, Robert Lewandowski's kept himself in good nick, but he's still, you know, in the autumn of his career. It's Jules Koundé. It's Andreas Christensen and Frank Kessié on free transfers. It's re-signing Ousmane Dembélé to another reduced contract. And the thing I think that is hard to square, whichever of those approaches you take, is Barcelona have sold all this stuff off, but that was a one-shot deal. You can't sell that stuff off again, otherwise you're not going to be out of, you're not going to have any money at all coming in. And yet they don't seem to have bought players with a particularly coherent plan towards the future. And I think that is the bit that sends alarm bells ringing, and that maybe makes you think that Joan Laporta hasn't embarked on an actually quite canny approach to kickstarting a new cycle, and instead has kind of panicked, because the nature of Barcelona means you can't say to your fans, we need a couple of years to build something. There is an urgency and a desperation to do everything right now that means Barcelona have gone out and thought, we just have to build a team from scratch and see how it goes, because the alternative is apparently unthinkable.
This is Paramount Plus. This is original series, like Star Trek Lower Decks and Mike Judge's Beavis and Butthead.
This is gonna be cool.
Live sports, like the NFL on CBS.
What a touchdown!
Family favorites, like Big Nate and Camp Coral, SpongeBob's Under Years. And exclusive movies, like Honor Society and Secret Headquarters.
Your dad's a superhero.
This is a mountain of entertainment. Paramount Plus. Stream now.
It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator. Stoke cold brew coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham fortress known as the Stoke Cairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favourites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this, as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend, have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage. Barcelona have something of a full circle moment in store this week, travelling to Germany to take on Bayern Munich. Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. Barcelona suffered, remember, 3-0 losses home and away in last season's group stage meetings against Bayern, reopening that barely healed wound of the 8-2 mauling by the Bavarian Giants' hands in the 2020 quarterfinal. Barca, of course, are now armed with Robert Lewandowski, for whom this will be a homecoming, das Heimkehr, of deep, complex emotions surrounding a gent for whom there are no more superlatives. How do you see this one playing out, Rory?
Well, I think the irony, you know, of the Barcelona thing, and obviously everyone's written a lot about it, everyone's talked a lot about it. We covered it last season on the pod. And, you know, Tariq, Pandra, my colleague, and I have written a lot about Barcelona. And yeah, like, there is a moral element to Barcelona where you think that what they're doing is kind of wrong, to be perfectly honest. My main reaction to Barcelona this summer has been disappointment that a club that could stand for so much more has chosen to go down this kind of immediate gratification route and is gambling with its future. That feels like the sort of thing that Barcelona should not be doing. But the absolute irony of it, and one of the great things about soccer is one of the great things about soccer's ability to kind of to usurp your expectations. Barcelona are now quite good. Like, there's a chance this is going to work, and that has to be factored in because they've still got some incredibly talented young players, Gavi and Pedri, probably the two most promising midfielders in the world, alongside Phil Foden at Manchester City, and obviously Anthony Gordon.
Thank you. I was leaning into the microphone.
I could see you making a face. They've got a kind of slightly more redoubtable defence, I guess. They look a bit more solid. And then they've got an absolute goal machine up front. And there's a reason that Robert Lewandowski scored 340 goals in 370 appearances or so at Bayern Munich. He just doesn't stop scoring goals. And he is 34 now. He is getting on. He probably only has 2 or 3 years of his absolute peak left, despite the fact that famously he eats his dessert first. And that is the secret of Robert Lewandowski's apparent immortality.
It's all it takes.
It's all you need to do. Yep. I've started eating my dessert first and have been scoring just bucket loads of goals ever since. It's against a four-year-old. But still, you know, they all count, as Romario would tell you. So they look like they are starting to click into something approaching a coherent unit, which is impressive enough given the number of new signings. And I think that they will go to Bayern and give them much more of a game than they have in any of their previous three meetings.
Oh, Bayern, I've got to say, looked fluid last week. They're saving it for the Champions League this season. Leroy Sané shone in the match against Inter. I do love that human being when he is healthy. European football is all the better for it. Again, Bayern hosts Barcelona Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. And next up, we're staying in the Champions League. In fact, we're making like Maradona and leaving Barcelona for Napoli. That was Sedata Namurata, the lovesick soldier, an iconic Neapolitan love song written by Agnello Califano during the First World War and the anthem of the quite singular SSC Napoli. At last, listeners, we are in Naples. Napoli recorded a shocking, utterly dominant demolition of Liverpool 4-1. It could have been so many more. And this week, they head off to that bear pit filled with Tennent special, Glasgow Rangers, Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. Naples, that ancient coastal city, seemingly adrift from the rest of Italy. A city so striking, overflowing with UNESCO heritage sites, loomed over by distant mountains and volcanoes that peer into a gulf basin of striking blue waters. It's a blue that Società Sportiva Calcio Napoli have worn on their jerseys since the 1920s. Napoli, perhaps the biggest club in Italy we have yet to discuss on this podcast, which is apt as they truly stand apart from the others. Juventus, Roma, the Milan clubs. In the Serie A's early days, the competition was split into regional leagues. But even after reuniting in the 1920s, Serie A was dominated by the big clubs up north. It took nearly 50 years for a team south of Rome to win the Scudetto when Cagliari, hailing from the island of Sardinia, won in 1970. This barely even scratches the surface of north-south Italian regionalism, which you and I would need, and I'd love this, Rory, a separate podcast series to flesh out. But it was against this backdrop that Napoli existed, sneered at by the richer, successful clubs, until the arrival of Diego Armando Maradona in 1984. Agenda was already football royalty on skill alone, but the marriage of club and player, chip on the shoulder and chip on the shoulder, Syria's black sheep and an outcast who didn't fit at the Palace of Barcelona, yielded the first two truly treasured league titles for a mainland southern Italian team, the only title still in Napoli history, enshrining Maradona into the club's lore, more than royalty, a god, a miracle worker, a healer of the sick. Rory, when you were growing up, was it possible to separate the myth of Maradona from the reality of Napoli?
No, I think so. I'm slightly too young to have been watching Italian football when Maradona was leading Napoli to titles. The first great Italian team I remember is the AC Milan team that kind of supplanted Maradona's Napoli. But even then, you had a very strong sense that Napoli was the place that Maradona had played, that Maradona was Napoli, that his ghost sort of roamed the stadium, that they almost like the club knew it could never be as good again. And, you know, when Maradona left in a, you know, troubled way, as he did everywhere he left.
it's just called leaving for Diego.
Just leave. Yeah, it's just how he thought you did it. But, you know, they did kind of have a ready-made replacement. Just Gianfranco Zola was his understudy at Napoli. And if you think about what a wonderful player Gianfranco Zola was, but he couldn't live up to Diego Maradona, and he certainly couldn't live up to Diego Maradona at Napoli. No, I remember in 1990 in the World Cup, there was, I think the semi-final was between Italy and Argentina, and it was due to be played in Naples. And there was a genuine question about whether the crowd would cheer for Italy, their homeland, or whether they'd cheer for Argentina because of Maradona. In the end, they cheered for the Italians, obviously, but that spoke to the strength of the bond between player and club, but also to an extent to the way the city felt within Italy. And if you go to Naples now, they will tell you that it feels like a South American city. And they wear that as a badge of honour, and it means that, you know, like all great ports, there's a slight edge to it. There's a really strong sense of community. There's an incredibly strong sense of local pride. Neapolitan dialect is completely incomprehensible. There is a real kind of idea that it's a place that is slightly different to everything that surrounds it. I think that's something that Neapolitans would happily admit to. There's an element of chaos to Naples that maybe does make it feel a little bit more South American. It feels a little bit more wild as a city than so certainly some of the more kind of austere and genteel places in northern Italy. It's very much a... You know, you go to somewhere like Bergamo. Bergamo does not feel like Naples, not by a long shot. And it's an incredible city, but it is a place apart, Naples. And I think that was what made the club feel so strongly towards Maradona, that he was the greatest player on earth and he had accepted Naples as his home. And I think to Neapolitans, that meant a lot.
The way you've described Naples essentially ticks every box of how I would describe Liverpool. Both cities that feel different to everywhere that surrounds them, with a people who are tight bonded, but always looking out to sea rather than back to the rest of the nation. See my mate Asif Kapadia's excellent film, Maradona, for a deep dive into this truly incredible narrative of a gent who partied hard all week, sweated it all out of his system for a day, then played transcendently before hitting it hard again. A bit like Rory on this podcast, even long after Maradona's tarnished exit from Naples, following a 15-month ban for failing a drug test. That legend never faded, but Napoli would fade. And in the last 20 years, they've collected only 3 Coppa Italias and a handful of second-place finishes. They're great players that drove them in those title chases, often picked off quickly by richer clubs. Cavani, Higuain, Lavezzi, Jorginho, Koulibaly this year. I'll sneak Allen's name into the mix as well, just because. And for the past decade, Napoli has been driven by the attacking talents of Dries Mertens. I love that gent. And Lorenzo Insigne. But as they age, their contracts due to a close, a bold decision was made to move on from both, skew the team younger. Last year, in manager Luciano Spalletti's first season, Napoli finished second with the tightest defence in the league. And this year, they added a spark plug to their attack. We spoke about him in our first episode. Kvicha Kvaratskhelia, the 21-year-old Georgian phenom, a statistical marvel on whom Napoli gambled $12 million to replace Toronto brand Insigne. in the hour he was on the pitch against Liverpool, he simply couldn't be contained. Comfortable on his left foot, his right foot, dangerous down the touchline, untouchable drifting into midfield, recording an assist and inches away from getting his first Champions League goal, were it not for VVD, that heartless bastard. Rory, what can you tell us about this player, Cavaradonna, whose nickname was all over all of our timelines last Tuesday?
Well, just before I do that, I think it's important to place him in context, to be honest, because the return of Napoli to as a frontline force in Italian football, and you're quite right, they've never won Serie A. They've gone close a couple of times, but they've not won Serie A since Maradona left. But the fact that they have over the last, I think, 12 years been such a regular presence in the Champions League that it is now officially boring when Liverpool play them, because Liverpool play Napoli all of the time, actually speaks to one of those stories that maybe we've got used to a little bit, so we don't quite appreciate. They're owned by a film magnate called Aurelio De Laurentiis, who is your central casting Italian football club owner. He's bombastic. He's prone to sort of emotional outbursts. He quite often says stuff that you don't really think he means just to annoy people. He's controversial. A lot of other presidents in Italian football don't really like him. But at the same time, De Laurentiis has turned Napoli, a club he found in bankruptcy, into a modern success story. Most years they go into the season not as favourites for the title, but possibly second or third behind Juventus ordinarily, or maybe one or two of the Milan clubs. They are the fourth power in Italian football now. I think that's clear to say. And what they've done with remarkable consistency is found incredibly exciting attacking players. So you go back to kind of the early 2010s, when Napoli were first kind of emerging onto the European scene. You had Marek Hamšík, Ezequiel Lavezzi, and Edinson Cavani. Then you fast forward on, as you mentioned, and you have the strike force of Insigne, Mertens, and Higuain, and then Higuain goes because he scores more goals in one season than anybody else. They can't find a direct replacement. And what they do is they switch Mertens into a central role and play Jose Callejon. And suddenly you have this mobile, fluid, inventive strike force. And again, not only do they challenge for the title, but Napoli serve as the birthplace of Sarri ball. They launch Maurizio Sarri as a major sort of high-quality coach. And that's an incredible imprint for a club of Napoli's size to be doing that constantly, to be refreshing itself constantly, whilst finding these players is remarkable. And then, this summer, Insigne goes to Toronto, which is a difficult decision for the player, but also for the club, because Insigne is Neapolitan through and through. He's a local kid. He is the idol of the terraces. Mertens is 34, decides he wants to move on. Callejon goes as well. And they have to rebuild. And they centre the rebuild on, to be honest, a fairly opportunistic piece of transfer wizardry, because Kvitsa Kvaratskhelia was playing for Rubin Kazan in Russia. He'd been one of those names that you'd not known how to pronounce but seen written down for a while, playing principally for the Georgian national team. And I think there was an occasion a couple of years ago where he scored a wonder goal in qualifying for some tournament or other for Georgia. And you heard, this is a 19-year-old Georgian winger. You immediately pay attention. But as players in that sphere of Eastern Europe tend to, he went to Russia, that's where the money was, and he kind of disappears from view at a Rubin Kazan team that's not playing that well. The war breaks out, Russia invades Ukraine, and foreign players in Russia are told that they're entitled to cancel their contracts. And he signs for Dinamo Batumi, which is traditionally one of the two big powers in Georgian football, for I think a few months at most. And then Dinamo Batumi, who must be really happy with this state of affairs, suddenly find themselves in receipt of a $12 million offer from Napoli for a player who until 6 months previously didn't belong to them, and they only got because he's cancelled his contract elsewhere. It was a gamble, and I think most people in Naples wouldn't have known what to expect. Federico Giuntoli, the sporting director of the club, said that he'd been on their list for 18 months. I think other major teams, Juventus, Roma, Spurs, had all looked at him. It's difficult to sign players from Russia. It's hard to know what you're going to get. Georgia isn't a place that's provided a lot of elite players in the last few years, so maybe there's a bit of suspicion there. I don't think anybody anywhere, except maybe in Georgia, expected Cavara to have the impact he's had, because he has exploded into the European consciousness, not just in Italy, but in the Champions League as well, by taking Trent Alexander-Arnold apart, and suddenly now ranks as, to me, the most exciting player to watch in Europe. And that's extraordinary. And it's testament not only to Napoli's willingness to take a risk on a player from an unexpected part of the world, but their continued ability to spot attacking players who can do really exciting things.
Few things in football are more romantic than a phenom bursting onto the scene, But there's also so much more to love about Napoli, including striker Gio Simeone. Yes, son of Diego Simeone, not Maradona in this case, who came off the bench to score the third last week and collapsed in emotion. And courtesy of Sid Lowe, we learned about the tattoo of the Champions League logo that he carries on his wrist, which he got at age 13. Who amongst us did not get a Champions League tattoo on their wrist at the age 13 and promised, like he did, to kiss it when they scored their first goal in this competition? 14 years later, he made his dream come true. I am still waiting. Manager Luciano Spalletti, fresh out of the hospital following an accident on the way to training that resulted in a broken collarbone, was utterly brimming with joy. It wasn't long ago his beloved Fiat Panda was stolen and Napoli ultras left a banner outside of the stadium that read, "Spalletti, your Panda will be given back as long as you leave." What a club. Few things are more menacing than Panda threats.
But do you not think that the genius there is that Luciano Spalletti has convinced the Napoli ultras that he drives a Fiat Panda? He's an elite football manager. He's got like four Lamborghinis at home, but he's created this impression that the one he really likes is the Banger, and so they've nicked that one. That is probably his greatest achievement.
Oh, lads, first rule of Serie A football management: you always have four cars, three Lambos and a Panda for stealing. What a club. Their match at that brimming, shaken up bottle of Iron Brew, Ibrox against Rangers, kicks off 3 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Paramount Plus. Next up, get your facial coverings and hard hats on. We're going to the land of flares and banging drums, known in these parts as the Europa League.
This is Paramount Plus. This is original series, like Star Trek Lower Decks and Mike Judge's Beavis and Butthead.
This is gonna be cool.
Live sports, like the NFL on CBS.
What a touchdown!
Family favorites, like Big Nate and Camp Coral, SpongeBob's Under Years. And exclusive movies, like Honor Society and Secret Headquarters.
Your dad's a superhero.
This is a mountain of entertainment. Paramount Plus. Stream now.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Together for Bodo, a wonderful original released by Bodo local Sondre K. Jensen, shortly before Bodo Glimpse secured their first ever Eliteserien title back in 2020. That is, honestly, quite truly, my favourite song ever of any kind. We will give everything for at least 90 minutes. Toot toot, here comes the train from Bodo. And I know this is an audio medium, but go and watch the music video because it just overflows with Scandinavian goodness. And our boys picked up a 1-1 draw away to PSV last week. And a paper talk is to believe their visionary coach, Kjetil Knutsen, is being lined up as one of the possibilities to replace Graham Potter at Brighton. As we joked on the pod this morning, he only manages teams that have two names. Keep an eye on their match this week. They're hosting FC Zurich at the Asmeida Stadium Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. And we've covered a lot of ground today, Rory, so let's keep this one short and simple. Where is your roving eye drawn in the Europa League this week?
As always with the Europa League, there are innumerable fascinating fixtures. I think Arsenal PSV would have been really interesting to watch had that not been cancelled, obviously, after the death of the Queen. I went to Feyenoord not long ago and would be keen to return for their game against Sturm Graz, probably the best name in European football there, I think, from Austria. Feyenoord have got a player called Quentin Timber, who I would recommend everybody becomes deeply familiar with very soon. But I think in terms of sheer atmosphere, you've got to go to Trabzon in Turkey, where Trabzonspor play Red Star Belgrade, two of the great names of European football, admittedly more Red Star Belgrade than Trabzonspor. Trabzon is a port city on the Black Sea, not far from the Georgian border, actually, in Turkey. And they have been waiting for decades to win a Super League title and finally ended that wait last season. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people out on the streets of Trabzon to celebrate. Not just the fact that they'd been waiting, but the sense that they'd been kept down deliberately by the big Istanbul clubs, that sense of kind of regional pride, of regional oppression by the footballing elite in Istanbul. Beşiktaş, Galatasaray and Fenerbahçe. Pure passion. I remember going to a game in Trabzon, I think about 14 years ago, and it is one of those deeply noisy places. I can still kind of hear it in my ears now. It was so noisy. There will be a real atmosphere there for the visit of Red Star Belgrade, who obviously aren't a superpower now, but there are very few more famous names in European football. That feels like if the Champions League was run properly and European football was much fairer, Trabzonspor versus Red Star Belgrade would be a Champions League quarter final, not a Europa League group stage game. But let's go to Trabzon and pretend that it's a Champions League quarter final.
God, when they won their first Turkish league title in 38 long years, Trabzonspor, the scenes were incredible, worth YouTubing, because if tifo and flares are an art form, their Akyazi Stadium, it's basically the Guggenheim. They host Red Star Belgrade Thursday, 12:45 p.m. Eastern. I took careful note of SC Freiburg's victory over Azerbaijani team Karabag, a 2-1 victory that would have been expected, but my God, I've got a soft spot for Freiburg, and their success brings me such joy. They're one of only four clubs in the Bundesliga to boast 100% democratic member control. They have a really progressive zeal, and on the field, they've risen through a meticulous recruiting process that prioritises player personality. Their manager, Christian Streich, has been at the club since 1995, started as an academy coach, is now the Bundesliga's longest serving manager, 11 years on, going on 12. And here's the kicker. They're currently second in the Bundesliga through six games behind Union Berlin. Freiburg's Europa League opponent this week, Olympiakos. Thursday, 12:45 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. Rory, you know what's coming. It's a quick dip into Conference League time. Take us there. What interests you this week?
Well, having predicted a heroic draw for a Latvian team in Florence last week, I think I might as well double down and go for a real absolute safe bet today. So Villarreal are the outstanding team in the Conference League, or they certainly are of the teams that are currently in the Conference League. It might be that the outstanding team in the Conference League is currently in the Europa League. That's how these things work. But I think this is a real chance this year for Villarreal to land a second European trophy. They won the Europa League a couple of years ago. I think under Unai Emery, they have the players, they've got a good, deep squad, they've kept hold of the majority of the players who got to the Champions League semi-finals last season, they're in good form in the league, they go to Hapoel Beersheba in Israel, and they will expect to sail through this group. And once they're in the knockout stages of the Europa Conference League, it's very hard to think that anyone will get the better of an Unai Emery team of any sort, let alone Villarreal. So I think they're worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and once Unai Emery wins the Conference League, he's just a Champions League short of getting the Mourinho tattoo, which will piss Jose off. I don't know what Jose will do when he sees that Unai Emery has his tattoo. He'll probably cut his own arm off. Shine on, Unai Emery, you crazy diamond. That match, Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern. My conference pick of the week, Djurgården's IF Football. Hailing from the Stockholm Island, once used as a retreat from palatial life for King Carl XIV Johan. We were once a retreat from palatial life for King Carl XIV Johan. You'll never sing that. It's now a popular recreation area in the city. There's an amusement park, a museum, a cafe on the former royal garden, which, as producer Jonah insists I mention, has a beetroot cake and gazpacho soup that is to die for. They entered the Conference League through the Odyssey of Europe. That's the qualifying rounds, recording victories in Croatia, Romania and Cyprus, just to earn a spot in Group F, where this week they will pound their shields in a Nordic derby against Norway's Molde. once home of Erling Haaland, grab your puffer coats, a glass of mead and tune on in Thursday, 12:45 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. God, I love the Conference League. Rory, one more before we go. A meal in Naples. What parts unknown can you offer me?
Well, I don't know if you've heard of pizza, Rog, but apparently it's very popular. This is a bit embarrassing. So Naples is the home of pizza. And I can tell you with some certainty that Naples is the place where I've had the best ever pizza I've eaten in my life. It is extraordinary. Neapolitan pizza is extraordinary. And I've been to a place called Da Michele, which I think is relatively well known. Amazing pizza. And you go, it's one of those places you Google and you check that it's got more than 4.6 stars. So you know it's good. And you go and the pizza's amazing and it changes your life. And you can never really eat another pizza again because you just want one of those again. But the secret with Naples, and Neapolitans will get really, if I haven't insulted the city enough already, wherever you go, the pizza's amazing. So I remember going for a game once and sitting on the front in Naples, and there's a castle out, sort of jutting out to the sea, and there's the sparkling blue waters of the Mediterranean, and the sun on your back, and there's a glass of lemon soda, the world's finest drink, on your table, and you know that there's a gelato nearby, so you're content and all is right with the world, and you linger over the meal, just you know that getting to the San Paolo as it was then, the Diego Armando Maradona as it is now, is an extremely long and quite sort of life-threatening taxi ride away, and you don't really want to do it. And that's not because Naples is dangerous, but their taxi drivers are not security conscious. And you don't want the pizza to stop. And you know that you're in a tourist trap. You know you're just there for tourists, and you know there's better pizza available. But the setting's so nice that you just think, well, I'll just sit here and stare at the sea. And the pizza that comes is a little bit overpriced, and it's not as good as the one at Da Michele. But it's the second best pizza you've ever eaten. So that's where we're going. We're going to the restaurants whose names I can't remember on the front in Naples, where we will eat the second best pizza you've ever eaten. That's what I can promise you.
I am a firm believer, Rory, that 3.9 to 4.2 stars is the ideal restaurant rating because it means the food is good and the service is rude, which is exactly how I love it. God, I do dream of going to Naples with you, eating knots of mozzarella straight out of the bucket, like the grandmother in Sorrentino's Hand of God. I honestly dream of so much of my life just being simply like Sorrentino's Hand of God, to be honest. That is all for us today. You got pizza on my mind and I need to satisfy that craving, Rory.
Well, it's 20 past 10 here where I am, so I can't really eat a pizza. So imagine what I've got to do tonight. I'm going to dream of pizza. This is not good broadcasting.
The honest truth is, Rory is about, this is how hardcore he is. He's about to go and finish a piece on deadline.
That's true.
There'll be no dreaming of pizza for you tonight, Smith.
It's not so much hardcore as badly organised.
Either way, we will be back in the first week of October for the next round of fixtures. Savour the football this midweek like never before, because after this weekend, let's never take it for granted. And remember, it all goes down live exclusively on Paramount Plus. New subscribers can get that 7-day free trial now by going to paramountplus.com/MIB. That's MIB. Encourage listeners, and to all of our listeners in Naples, coraggio. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths, and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.